if you study science or chemistry, even for a little while, you'll come across something called the periodic table, and you'll also come across a heroic story of how people in the very first days of atomic physics unpicked the mystery of the hydrogen atom, which promised great promise to unpick other mysteries. Because this little story of unpicking a mystery of the hydrogen atom led really to nowhere, led to a dead end from which the ashes of which quantum mechanics emerged. But also the periodic table, if you look at it for a while and you study it, you'll be soon guided to the left of the periodic table to these numbers, which are the periods of the periodic table. And it's often confusing to link the periods of the periodic table, that's 1 to 7 periods, this is rows of the periodic table, with the orbitals and shells imagined in the mind of Bohr, who gave us our first insight into hydrogen. Let's stop now, and I'll tell you who I am. I'm Peter Hill, and I'm coming to you on this podcast in a series called Peter Hill Explains. I'll try and add some sort of insight for those who want to stick around and look more deeply into science. And in some cases, science has been made easy at one stage, but without the foresight of more complexity coming on. And so things which are deceptively simple are, in fact, simple and deceptive, which is rather interesting if you come to think of it. So, looking at the periodic table, you have the periods 1 to 7, and looking at the hydrogen atom, you have shells for the electrons to be in, and they go 1 to very, very high up, to very high numbers, in fact, even infinitely high. And the story is that forgetting the periodic table numbering, the periodic table numbering is pretty much like numbering seats in a theatre, row seats in a theatre, front row seats up to 7 seats. You can imagine the elements all arranged as different theatre seats. But if we also go, so we've got one number, and they're different numbers, I have to tell you. You've also got another number associated with hydrogen. It's often tempting to think the number of the shell corresponds to the number of the period, which unfortunately corresponds to nothing to do with, or some vaguely thing to do with, quantum mechanics. This is what I'll try and get to at this stage. Rather than paint a complex picture, I'll go dive right in on this. So in a hydrogen atom, so we move across to another page, the hydrogen atom, and we've got shells, and the shells are the orbits, the imagined planetary orbits of electrons, these minute electrons which surround the nucleus. And you may have heard in a previous podcast that quantum mechanics is to throw all this out and replace the small electron with huge, surfaceless, ghost-like electron which fills the entire atom. But we won't go there yet. We'll go back into the mind of Bohr. And he imagined electrons as these tiny little chips of the old block, these tiny thousandths of the weight of the nucleus orbiting around under command of the more massive nucleus and orbiting in a beautiful circle. And these orbits decayed or went as a ever decreasing circles, increasing circles, but decreasing in the size. So the first step is a big step. The second step is a step beyond that, but a small step. And there was a law to it. And I won't go through the maths of it because I really don't think it really actually works in a podcast to actually get you thinking of maths. But if you can imagine someone who has a set of steps going into a spire in a garden, on the outside you have small steps, and as you go in, you get progressively larger steps, and the largest step is into the very center of the atom. And amazingly, electrons can't actually, in the Bohr model, go into the center of the atom. It's forbidden. And it's almost a religious call to religious belief. It can't go in the center. He proclaimed it as a postulate, similar to a postulate in religion, and sort of aping a bit the idea of postulates of Einstein. But Einstein had a different idea of postulates. Bohr's postulates were, go away, don't ask me. There'll be a new physics, I predict, which will come and sort all these problems out. And quantum physics certainly sorted out all these problems. It said you really don't need to actually go down the path that Bohr had predicted. So he sort of predicted, well, there's a few problems, but physics will come along and solve it. And this is the sort of fundamental promise of Bohr, which hasn't been delivered. So we'll have to reverse. One of the first scientists to look at the spectra of hydrogen and try and solve it did come up with a solution. He was a Danish scientist called Niels Bohr, and I'll stop and give a podcast about how he escaped the Nazis at the hand with the help of the British by getting in the bomb bay of a mosquito bomber, which landed in Copenhagen or in Denmark. And there's other stories where Bohr outwitted the Nazis by dissolving his Nobel Prize in a special acid which dissolves gold. But let's get back to Bohr and his atom. So he had a numbering system for each of these orbitals, which goes 1, 2, 3, and you have the numbering on the side of the periodic table. Now, the numbering on the side of the periodic table really is just a convenience ordering one, but the numbering on the side of his energy levels are linked to quantum mechanics. And those numbers that he has in his orbitals are called the principal quantum number. So there are four each electron. There are traditionally, when I say this, traditionally three quantum numbers. The principal quantum number, which links directly across, conveniently, and traditionally across to the traditional concept of Bohr. There's an azimuthal quantum number, which is really, I suppose, impossible to understand in the theory of Bohr, of electrons just flowing around the place, flying like little flies at an Aussie barbecue. But easy to understand in quantum mechanics, where your electron is basically a beautiful fuzzy surface, and the azimuthal ones are these, I suppose, samurai sword cuts through this, through these electrons, where the electrons vibrate, and I think you can say that, vibrate either side of these cuts. So the azimuthal cuts, if you can imagine people cutting a watermelon, they're cutting a watermelon from the top azimuthally from the skyward down to the equator, down to the other pole. And the next quantum number, so we have three quantum numbers, the principal quantum number, the azimuthal quantum number, and another number, which is called the magnetic quantum number. Now, let's just stop it back, because things get a bit hairy and complicated to understand, because the principal quantum number is a number of the orbital. So you have orbitals number one, which is closest to the nucleus, two further, three further, and though hydrogen light that you can see are all transitions from the higher orbitals to orbital number two. Transitions to orbital number one are so high energy, they're in ultraviolet and we don't see it. They're very important transitions, the later ones in terms of the universe and energy transport, but for us humans, it's down to the second quantum number. This is principal quantum number. And I have to, this is going to be very hard, so please, please, please concentrate. Now, the link between the principal quantum number and the periodic table is broken. So what happens is that you have on the fourth row of the periodic table, you have the elements, transition elements. And even though it's in the fourth row, the electrons contained in the metals of those fourth rows are from the third quantum number. And this is a very confusing thing, and a lot of people miss this point. So the actual numbers, the principal quantum numbers, don't line up with the periodic table. But we have to stop here and actually really delve in to what is the principal quantum number. The principal quantum number really relates, is a number which relates to the energy of a particular shape of an electron. And it's very important, so you can get an overall view of the energy of a particular shape of an electron by its principal quantum number. But that principal quantum number is actually a historical salute to Bohr, and it's actually rather confusing because that principal quantum number is, wait for it, the radial quantum number plus the azimuthal quantum number plus one. And so this is this bizarre sort of arithmetic which is held within that principal quantum number. And so we have a lot of people are taught this, but they're actually not taught the more fundamental basis of it. So for something with a 1s, and I have to describe what s is, but for something with a principal quantum number 1, it's got a radial quantum number of 0, and then an azimuthal quantum number of 0 as well. It actually has no nodal lines. If you imagine a skipping rope, there's actually no half waves. So a full skipping rope going around, you have no waves, no nodes in it. But if you can actually spin that skipping rope such that it appears to be stationary in the center, stationary points, that will have a node. And so these first orbitals, first two orbitals, so I'll have to go back into it, so much science, can I tell you, it's a lot of fun, have no nodes in it. So your quantum number, your principal quantum number, yes, it does give you the energy, but no, it doesn't give you real deep insight into what's going on. The next azimuthal number is actually really slave to the quantum number, to the periodic table. So the first quantum number actually misguides you into your periodic table if you actually think the first quantum number has got to do with the period. The second quantum number is really slaved to the periodic table. And this is that second quantum number, the azimuthal quantum number. So if you can imagine a samurai sword person slicing up a watermelon down through it, that is the second quantum number. The first quantum number is more like peeling onions off, or peeling layers off an onion. The second quantum number is the slices through the electron. And they're not cutting the electron, the actual electron. They're stationary points where the electron oscillates either side of it. And bear in mind that in quantum mechanics, the wishful thinking that electrons are tiny little dots and they go in and out of existence is all complete fantasy and actually based on fraud. It's actually a fraudulent history that people don't say because we want to present a beautiful idea of a coherent future of history. But so let's go back again to our principal quantum number, which we all know is, say, 1s or 2s or 3s, is the energy level. And as we walk up the principal quantum number and we look at the s, p, d, and f, that refers to the azimuthal quantum number. So instead of using a second number, we use a letter. And that's just a historical thing, a historical salute to the periodic table, a historical salute to the spectroscopists who, for each of these letters, saw something in the spectra, the light coming out of atoms with these azimuthal quantum numbers. The lights had certain properties or shapes or descriptive terms. And this is, of course, to do with the number of times the electron is whipping either side of the nucleus. Now, we'll slow here for a while. The S, P, D, and F stands for sharp, principal, diffuse, and fundamental. For some reasons, they had these names. You can imagine the sharp is actually a very fine line. The diffuse ones, the D blocks or transition block in the middle of your periodic table, is diffuse. It's hard to see where it peaks. The other ones of principal, which is, I suppose, strong, and fundamental, basically, who knows what that means, but very exciting elements, those in the F block at the bottom of the periodic table. But those are azimuthal quantum numbers. Now, there is obviously a law relating the azimuthal and radial quantum number through the principal quantum number. So we'll go back and say the principal quantum number, which is that 1s or 3s or 3p, is to do with the radial quantum number plus the azimuthal quantum number plus 1. So, of course, there is this link between the radial quantum number and the azimuthal quantum number, but it's a historical link. There is a sort of a restriction that you can't have more radial nodes. This is onion skin levels. So if you've got three onion skin levels, there is a maximum number of slices. This is slices which go from the pole or through the equator. So there is a limit there, but it's actually a slightly more, I suppose, intuitive or straightforward link if you don't take a big long D to a through bore. So the principal quantum number, very useful because it is useful in energy, detecting energy, but it actually hides the beautiful symmetry. So if you go, say, for a quantum number of 2, you can get 2, and you have the equation, the radial quantum number plus the azimuthal quantum number plus 1 equals 2. You can have either a 1 in the radial or a 1 in the azimuthal. If it's a 1 in the radial, that's a 2s. A 2s electron, and that says that there's just a single, you can actually just peel off a layer of electron, and there'll be a boundary layer there. But say if you want to go into the 2p, yes, has almost by definition a quantum number of 2, but that actually is just a radial quantum number of 0 and a azimuthal slice quantum number of 1. So you can see it's quite confusing to come through there. And if you just follow this through and look at the energy and look at the shape and closeness of the electron, you'll get in to something else which I'll cover in another episode. This is the electron configuration filling rule. So having taken this detour through Bohr and the principal quantum number, you then come up with something called a filling rule, this mysterious way that why certain energy levels are small and lower and don't fit what you would think would be a logical path forward. And on that next episode, I'll go through and look at it. So just in summary, we've gone back to sort of an overall view that there are traps, historical traps, as people have walked onto one area, walked to another, and then walked to a third area. And people following in the steps, footsteps of the historical people who started the periodic table, went on to the analyzing hydrogen, and then went on to quantum mechanics, can easily be lost by these rules of thumb to guide you through a historical path. Now remember, these people in history didn't know what was coming next, and so it's not necessarily the most logical thing you're told for actually going forward. But just to summarize again, you've got the periods, which are just really the row numbers for the periodic table. You have the principal quantum number, which is to do with the energy, and they didn't know why it worked, and it does work for reasons quantum mechanical. And then you have the actual quantum mechanical numbers, which actually tell you the shape of electrons. Yes, indeed, electrons are not tiny. In quantum mechanics, they're not tiny little points. They're actually shapes. They don't have surfaces. And there's a lot of, you know, just breathtaking and mind-bending. I really say mind-bending science in electrons. And they are beautiful things to look at. And of course, one must not forget that electrons do carry a charge, a quantum number of charge. And these are very fundamental, beautiful, lightweight, fuzzy, and amazing creatures, these electrons. So I hope this has opened up your mind to not understanding, but to have an appreciation that there is this sort of complexity, there's a historical convenience, and you have to be aware of it. So when you're walking in to looking at these quantum numbers and the rules are there not due to physics or some physical form of nature, they're more cultural rules, and they have their origin in a cultural evolution of the periodic table. And that cultural law, combined with with scientific laws, give you the rules for working out what's going on when you look at these quantum numbers. And these quantum numbers are all important for working out what the electron looks like, and ultimately from what the electron looks like, or where it is, or where it's hanging out, the chemistry and the actual physicality of all these fabulous different elements. Now, that's an attempt to try and explain this. It's a beautiful attempt. I must admit, before I was a teacher and before I was confronted with this, I sort of understood it, and I said, well, that's a complicated thing. No one else is going to be, or very few people. I wonder if I'll meet people who will understand that. And to be truthful, I have met no one. I have to tell you now, I have actually met no one in my life, and it may be that I'm a sad individual who really understands it. There are a lot of people who have their understanding, but their understanding is a roadmap to ignorance. They refer to things they haven't really thought through, or they refer to people who, when you track a long distance away, who understand it. No, they don't understand it. They refer to authority. It's they have an explanation which reinforces, I suppose, ignorance and dependency by talking to them. So they're pretty powerful words. But mind you, I haven't worried. I've enjoyed the physics and enjoyed understanding things. But hopefully, by listening to this, I'll let you through. Well, you can join me in the excitement and the understanding when you can understand this and break through. So that's all for tonight, and I hope I've in cardiac rehabilitation. As I'm getting to speak a bit more clearly, I can actually sound a bit more comprehensible. Unfortunately, I do pick topics which are intrinsically hard to understand, and people often critique me by saying, oh, look, I didn't understand what you're saying. You mustn't be a good explainer. Well, I think the real issue here is some of these things are very difficult to understand, and we've sort of built a society where we've sort of accepted near enough is good enough, and we've sort of waved people through, and it's part of the culture of waving people through. When someone has a go at explaining it, they sort of turn on that person and say, we haven't understood you. It's not that we haven't understood or we haven't sat down and done the maths or read the books. It's just you're not very good at explaining. I'm not upset about that. That's just an observation. So leaving you with that thought, please keep on doing science and hang in there. I'll try again with a few explanations and talks about quantum mechanics. Bye for now. In the meantime, keep on doing science.